All right, check 1, 2. I'm going in.
Yep.
Cool. All right, microphone check. Looking
all
good.
All right, I am recording.
Give me 2 seconds to get some more beverage. I just have to go right there.
Mike, you on?
I'm on.
Logan, he's told me this story a number of times about where there was some guy was fighting a goblin, and he was like, I'm going to rip his dick off.
Oh, well, that escalated quickly.
And he was like, all right, roll for it. And then the guy rolls a 1. And then the GM's like, well, you grab it and you just kind of gently stroke it. You know, it's a... and he's like, the goblin's horrified,
the
though.
I mean,
he's
away.
You freaked
feeling
him out.
Awkward, but yet also kind of aroused.
Hello, welcome to Because Nerd. This is our 12th episode. It's the 19th day of March 2020 as we record this. Happy late St. Patrick's Day. I'm your host, Chris Farrell, and I'm joined today by two of my best and oldest friends, Brad.
Yo.
And Mike.
Hey now.
As well as a special guest, Chris Burdett, and he is actively in the midst of a quite successful Kickstarter for a badass art book that he's been working on for a while.
It's pretty badass.
Called The Grand Bazaar of Ethra Vandalia.
Vandalia.
Vandalia. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, so the badass book, which is pretty awesome, if I do say so myself.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Yeah, we got to flip through it at the con.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. I saw that copy, and it was just amazing. I can't wait to see, like, the finished thing. You know, it's going to be like red with gold letters and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, the cover is going to be a red leather, faux leather with gold embossed text and everything.
So did you guys get to flip through this? Did they get to look through that book at Pensacon?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I have a printer's proof from the printer because the book is done. Everything's 100% done, so it goes into printing the minute the Kickstarter ends. Because I did not want to do the Kickstarter with an unfinished product.
Yeah.
Because that's the last thing I want to do. And that's the last thing I want to do to people. It's give me a bunch of money now and you're going to have to wait 3 years.
Right.
I'm like, no, you're going to get the book in 3 months.
Hell yeah.
And how long is the Kickstarter going?
It goes until the end of the month. I think it ends at like 9:59 a.m. on the 30th.
So, Chris, one thing we did, we went ahead and we backed you on this.
Woohoo! More money.
So, Chris, we're going to do a deal with our social media where we're going to kind of run a little campaign for people to like get into a lottery to win one of these.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
Now, me and Chris have seen it, but, you know, some of our listeners might not have been at the con to see it. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. So the Grand Bazaar of Ethra Vandalia is set in a world that I first envisioned 22 years ago when I was still a student. I envisioned this world of monsters and commerce. It is a series of art and interconnected stories that talk about all these different monsters that I've created and begins to tell you the story about them and the world that I've envisioned. It's kind of somewhere between like a scrapbook and a novel and a monster manual and kind of all these things put together.
Nice.
It's the first book in a series. I've actually started working on the next 2 books already. And for the last 21 years, I've made monsters for other people, be it in the film industry, television, gaming. But all this time, I've kind of been working on my own thing behind the scenes and finally decided it's now time to make my own work. And I've made a thing. And
I love the artwork. It actually reminds me of a lot of stuff that I super love, which one of them is Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, thank you.
And it has a little bit of a feel of that.
Yeah, it's got a sweet feel.
Yeah.
Incredible artwork.
Yeah, thank you.
What it seemed like to me is this story kind of feels like is a mix of Canterbury Tales and The Dark Crystal put together.
Hmm.
I mean, that's quite a compliment.
So this seems like it's a pretty big story setup going on with the Grand Bazaar. It's almost more than you can tell. This seems like a lot to develop. I'm trying to figure out how it comes about.
It definitely takes time. And it for me, it always starts with the art. which is kind of tricky because I have an idea and then the art happens and I create the art and then I tell a story about the art.
Okay. So like when you first started, what was it like in the early days before it was the notion of the Grand Bazaar and like the gathering of everything?
Yeah. 22 years ago, I was in a printmaking class and we had an assignment. We had to like take this one piece through several different styles. And I just started drawing this weird dragon. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of stuck with me. And I was like, why is this dragon creature collecting objects? And why is it documenting things? And it just kind of built from there over decades. Because I kind of put it away after that. There was something about it that stuck with me. And I revisited it 10 years after I did the original image. And that was 11 years ago now. And I redesigned the character, why it is, what it is, what it looks like. And that second design is very similar to what I've actually used for the final book. But it was at that moment where things started coming together. So several years after that, I went to a workshop, illustration masterclass that happens every summer. And anyone, you know, people who are students to veterans go and they learn and you have an intensive week-long process. Some of the visual aesthetic of the final book manifested in that workshop. And one of the assignments that year was dragon. So I designed another reptilian creature that's actually in the book, and then like a little goblin creature, which is in the book. And that's where the bazaar finally took shape. Mm-hmm. The next some odd years, it just kind of snowballed. Whenever I wasn't working for clients, I was secretly working on the bazaar.
Yeah, that's the fun kind of project, the ones that keep calling you.
It's awesome. And what you see online doesn't really do it justice. You know what I mean? Because when you get it in your hands and there's just so much detail to it, like the world, it's expansive. I was just impressed off of that. But you know, when you say, you started it 22 years ago, okay, yeah. I believe that, yeah.
I mean, I think there's something in a lot of artists that they want to have their thing. They're searching for their style, or they're searching for their opus. And I didn't have any idea what that was. And it just, but I needed to make a book. One of the things on my checklist, to-do list, was make a book. It continued to nag at me, and it kept reminding me like, hey, there's this thing. You remember me, this world you're building. Keep working on it.
Hell yeah.
It just came to me, which I'm thankful for, because if I had set out to like make the book, it would never have happened. And now I can't stop. You know, I have way too many other books now planned. And I just like last week came up with a brand new idea for an entire new book set in the world. And I'm like, well,
jeez, how much is this going to cost me then?
How much money do you have?
Yeah.
The second book's actually going to be smaller and it's going to be self-contained.
Damn, that's awesome.
The plan right now is all of the odd-numbered books are a continuing story and all of the even-numbered books are self-contained smaller books. So,
hey, so far I'm turning it into a fan, so I'm probably going to be buying all of them.
Yeah, right. That's the way to go, though. You know, working on whatever inspires you, you drive with that. But you were talking about like the story you made. The way you did it, I think, is pretty original because there's a story in each description, you know, as far as the monster manual goes.
Yeah, like for each entry, there's 30 entries in the book of monsters, plus there's big environmental pieces, so there's entries for that. But for each one, there's about 6 different voices that talk about each thing. So you have like a man on the street view, you have a lesser scholar, a more experienced scholar. Aethra has their view on things. And then some of them have a lot more recipes. There's poems. And then they all end with a skeptic's view of the world. Nice. And it's up to the reader to kind of like figure out what's fact and what's fiction. And throughout all those entries, there's similar voices and there's stories that go through the entries. So there's 2 voices. One is Agatha and one is Reginald. And they are throughout the entire book. And the kind of Agatha is a younger and more inexperienced scholar, and she's doing a lot of the hard work of the nuts and bolts of what these monsters are. And then you have Reginald, who is a senior in the organization. It's called the Impure Husk. They document everything. And he just spends a lot of time talking about himself. But He loves to drink. He loves to eat. He's imbibed in some controlled substances, and you kind of go along with him throughout all of that. And then Aethra comes in with their view, and Aethra is a mysterious traveler and has been around for at least 4,000 years. Their point of view on things is unique.
You get tainted after that long.
Yeah.
I think I'm bonding with Reginald right now.
Oh, yeah. He's not perfect. He's not a saint, and he's kind of into himself. But he was just fun. He was fun to write.
What mediums do you work in to create the art? Like, are you doing pencil drawings or using digital?
Everything for the book is all traditional media.
That's awesome. I always wish I could draw like that. Like, I have Procreate on my iPad, right? But my stuff looks like absolute shit.
Yeah, I sometimes joke with my friend. We talk about life as a role-playing game, and it's like, you know, it's like, oh, that person put all their stat points in basketball.
Right.
And he talks about how he wants to do a more even, he wants to be the Mario of Mario Go-Kart, and I'm like, I'm Bowser. I want to go all in heavy with the art.
Fuck yeah.
There's two bit of advice that I've received in my life. The first one was from the concept artist Carlos Suantes, and I talked to him and I showed him my portfolio. And throughout the entire portfolio, he was just like, ugh, ugh, oh my God. And he's just like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I want to be concept guy, I want to do painting. And he's just like, no, shut up. You need to draw more. And I'm like, what? It's like, draw more. And then I began to ask him questions. He's like, no. Draw more. Whatever you're going to say, shut up and draw more. Just get in there and work.
Fuck yeah.
And the second advice, James Gunn, you know, who's made trauma movies and Marvel movies, he said that the difference between a hobbyist and a professional is that a professional finishes. And so it's like when people come up to me at conventions and stuff and they're like, hey, I want to do this thing. I'm like, draw more and finish.
So I'm curious, like, so you said you've been doing this for about over two decades now.
Yeah.
I'm curious about some of the path. What were some of the most standout experiences you've had leading up to here?
Oh, gosh. While I was still at FSU, I worked on a low-budget vampire movie that was being shot in Tallahassee, Florida, that never saw the light of day, but it actually opened the door for me to move to Los Angeles. I worked on things like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, Firefly, you know, all of the Joss Whedon stuff, plus tons of other...
When's that Firefly second season coming out, by the way?
No.
What? Don't do that to me.
Yeah, that was the funny thing, too, is like working on it, we didn't know. We didn't have the perspective to know that we were working on something that was groundbreaking and was going to have this huge fan base. It was just the job.
It was total greatness. Oh. That was one of the best shows ever.
Loved it. Loved it.
Okay, this is the nerd cred that I always get people with. So the episode Janestown, I oversaw making the Jane statue.
That's my very favorite episode.
And the hands of the statue are my hands. Oh. They molded my hands and put them on the statue. And then the character Stitch Hessen, I designed the burn makeup that was on the villain of the episode.
That's cool.
So, like,
that's a cool
the Janestown episode is, like, my episode.
I mean, and everyone knows that was really the episode that made the whole series, you know?
Yeah, but after L.A., I got into the gaming industry, and I worked on Dungeons & Dragons, Magic the Gathering, a ton of Star Wars games. And that's how I earned my street cred and busted my chops. And it was the last 15 years that I kind of, like, got my adult professional art career established.
What edition of Dungeons & Dragons were they on when you started with them?
It was still 3.5, but when I got brought in, I began working on something called 4th Edition that I didn't know was happening. I was just working on D&D. I thought I was working on 3.5, but apparently I was doing a ton of concept work for 4th Edition there because they were keeping it pretty close to the vest. So they were having me doing all these, like, redesigns and updates on characters that I didn't put two and two together that they were working on something new. And then years later, I've done a ton for 5th edition. So, yeah, I'm to blame to why people hated and loved monsters in 4th edition and loved and hated monsters in 5th edition.
But it's had a nice resurgence in modern times, so it's...
And I'm very happy about that.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I played first, I played second, I played third, But for me, 4th edition was my edition because I worked on it and I played more 4th edition than any other of the edition. And I was a dungeon master and I got my friends involved and people who had never played. And it was a great time. I was always the dungeon master because no one had the experience and no one wanted to take the time. And also, as the DM, I get to be all the monsters, which is where I'm at. You know, it's like, you know, it's
plotting in the early days. Already, I got a plan. Yeah.
Part of my Kickstarter is that I'm offering a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons compatible stats guide for all of the monsters in the book.
Hell yeah.
And that was one of the things. One of my players, who is one of my friends, hey, Charles, this is a shout out to you. He said to me right before the Kickstarter launched, he's like, man, I just remember when you were a DM and I said to you, why don't you make your own campaign and tell your own stories? And you just looked at me and smiled and kept on going. I'm like, yeah, because
I was way ahead of you, Charles. I was already there, man.
Yeah, I was like.
Gosh, you another one. So this is another project I think you worked on, right? All Souls Day in 2005?
Yes. In front of and behind the camera.
I wanted to ask him about that too, yeah.
Nice.
Okay. I think everybody's a Danny Trejo fan. So did you get to meet him?
Oh, yeah. Well, I should say that the most important thing is that I got to eat his arms.
Oh. Meet him.
He got to eat him.
Yeah, and Danny Trejo is a saint, and he is a gift to mankind. I cannot say enough good things about Danny. Danny's awesome.
Amen. That's awesome. I've never met him or anything.
Cool.
Just
that is cool. It's great to hear.
It's always a warm breeze when you stand near him, and he smells like Old Spice constantly.
I hadn't watched it since it came out until just a couple years ago. Friends of ours had like a birthday party, big thing, and there's a local video store that does screenings and stuff, and you can rent space. And one of the movies they decided to do was All Souls Day. So it's like that was the first time I had seen it in like a decade. Yeah, but it was just really fun. And of course, Danny steals the show. He's great. And also, I'm drawing a blank, the other actor. I even had him sign it. He was in a ton of Star Trek stuff. He plays the Andorian. He plays Ferengi. But he plays the dad in All Souls Day. And
Jeffrey Combs.
That would be it. The amazing Jeffrey Combs. Yeah. Like two Pensacons ago, he was a guest. And I took my copy of All Souls Day and had him sign it. Because one of those things where like, so you probably don't get a lot of these signed. But, you know, a long time ago, we worked together. And he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, we worked on this movie together. I was in the makeup department and I was a zombie. And he's like, oh, my God. And so, yeah, strange small world. I was like, will you sign this? But hopefully someone's on Google looking that up.
There you go.
That was the weird thing about working in LA, working on movies and TV, is that you have this weird separation of fandom because you're doing a job. And so, like, I love Jeffrey Combs' work on Star Trek. And, like, these roles really stand out to me. Like, I love monsters, so aliens count as monsters. And I just love characters. I love kind of the quirky, different, standout roles. And Jeffrey Combs did them all, and I worked with him. I didn't harass him at the time, so I got to harass him years later because you don't want to come on hard like, will you sign this for me?
Yeah, you got to be cool, yeah. You got to make them feel like they want to sign it.
That was the best story I heard by Bruce Campbell. Bruce Campbell talked about meeting William Shatner, and he went in with T.J. Hooker. It's like, oh, so did you do all your own driving stunts? And it was like, yeah, that was apparently the hook.
Yeah, that's a good end.
That's a good one.
That's the thing. I don't cross paths with folks much anymore in the industry. Friends of mine, Brian Stillman and Jeff Solomon. Brian is a filmmaker, and he's done Plastic Galaxy and Eye of the Beholder, the Art of Dungeons & Dragons. He's done documentaries set in geekdom and art and, you know, the stuff that we love. And it was through Dungeons & Dragons that I met him. And I backed his Kickstarter to fund his first movie, Plastic Galaxy, which is all about the history of Star Wars toys. Unbeknownst to me, he was collecting my art behind the scenes. And I didn't put two and two together. So he came and visited me at Gen Con 5 years ago. And he's like, hi, I'm Brian Stillman. And here's my card. I'm a filmmaker. And I've been buying your art. I really love it. And I'm like, wait a minute. Wait, what movie did you make? It had a visceral effect on me. And like, it moved me in a way that, like, because there's some bitey, negative Star Wars stuff out there where it's you know, they're nasty. They're nasty about it, and they're nasty about fans. But it was just like, when I watched Plastic Galaxy, I was like, wait a minute. These people really legitimately love Star Wars, and they love the toys, and it's like, it's part of their life. And for me, I mean, I collected for a long time. I have a vast Star Wars collection. I don't collect anymore, but, you know, the urge is always there. And it's, you know, so I was totally like, I nerded out on him hardcore and like totally geeked out at him when he came to me to nerd out and geek out.
He turned the tables on me, that son of a bitch.
It's like I out-nerded him. And,
yeah.
That's awesome.
That's what we all want.
That's the wonderfulness, the fun thing about this industry and these circles of people and like art and gaming and toys and stuff, that they're a common denominator that we can all approach in our own way. And then, you know, they create our own tribe, our own group. I don't know what that has to do with my book or my art, but that's something I just really like about all of this.
It's how I find out about your book, right? Plus, as nerds, right, you collect things, right? It's about having that cool book that you love in the bookshelf. And then when, you know, friends come over, you can show it to them. Well, maybe they won't be coming over anytime soon since we're going to distance ourselves from each other. But when they do come over, I will introduce them to the book.
Well, that's why that's why they all have to get their own copy.
Right, because no one's allowed to interact anymore, yeah.
When the survivors of the apocalypse come to my house, while they're burning the wood from my deck, because I am long since gone, they're going to find this book. It's going to keep them entertained at night.
Dude, you're actually filling up my shopping cart. Now I have Plastic Universe on Vudu ready to go. I have my Kickstarter for The Bazaar ready to go.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think at least I have a holder I know is on Amazon Prime. And they're actively, it's Brian Stillman, Seth Polansky, and Kelly Slagle. They're actively working on a Magic the Gathering documentary. And I think it's called Igniting the Spark, The Story of Magic the Gathering.
I'm going to get some uncle points on this too, because I'll go back to the Buffy the Vampire Slayer, my oldest niece's favorite TV series of all time. Her favorite game, Magic the Gathering.
Nice.
She's a D&D gamer.
Nice. Well, my favorite Buffy episode, though, I mean, I only worked on episode 7, but the episode with Gnarl, the green demon that eats Willow's stomach, I designed Gnarl.
Wow. Yeah, nice.
That's cool.
And the super former and actor, Camden Toy, that's how we got to know him, and I ended up working with him a ton through both Buffy, Angel, and stuff, and still keep up with him, and he's an amazing guy. It's just, it's one of those things, like, you make a monster, and you meet the actor, and then you, like, stay friends with them forever.
That's cool.
It's a circle of life.
Another thing I'm picking up is you must have a pretty awesome toy and signature collection.
Comes
with the territory, man.
Yeah. I got to talk to Mr. Harris, Alan Harris, last year at Pensacon, who played Bossk, and I had him sign a lot of action figures and a lot of stuff. Bossk was kind of the pivotal moment of my entire career. I was 6 years old, and I saw this lizard creature in Empire Strikes Back, and I'm like, I don't know what that is, but that is awesome. And I've spent my career making space lizards. Lo and behold, he was in our own hotel in Pensacon, and I get a message from my wife, get over here right now. And I come around the corner, and she's talking to Mr. Harris. And it's one of those things, and it has allowed me to experience these things that are not lost on me. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm in this position to like take advantage of this. So it's weird. It's really weird.
I'm not surprised that part of that story involves that your wife had found him, because 2 years ago at Pensacon with Mike Fielding.
Oh, yeah.
I've told that story on this podcast before, but she knows how to make friends. She knows how to get people talking.
Yeah, she is an amazing human being, and I'm lucky to have her as my shenanigans companion, because at other events, she is actually on the board of some conventions as the shenanigans coordinator.
An official title. Nice.
Yeah, an official title. And she's my wing woman, and, you know, she's my better half. We have it worked out.
Well, Chris, you talked about that you DM'd for a while. I'm just wondering, what's your quintessential D&D kind of memory?
Oh, well, I got two. I got one as a player and one as a DM. So as a player, this was in third edition. I was a dwarven cleric. You can heal yourself and get the F out of there and screw everyone else. You know?
There you go.
So we were doing the return to the tomb of elemental evil. And there was a big group of us. And we got to the center. We got to the center. Like, you had to pick a door. And I think one door was fire, water, earth, and there was another one. So we picked fire because we assumed it was going to be a red dragon. And we got in there, and the red dragon presented itself, and literally half the party was immediately succumbed to dragon fright. And like, they were done. They were out of the battle. It was... And then 9 ogres show up, and the paladin is like, huzzah, I have the ogres, and ran off to the ogres. So it was an elder red dragon and a 10th level dwarven cleric. And I single-handedly, true to dice rolls, beat it myself.
Wow.
And that was an amazing night. I had multiple mythical weapons in the air. I had giant insects fighting with me. It burned through all of my scrolls, all of my spells. It was a tooth and nail. I was rolling amazing. And the last roll was a divine light scroll. I rolled a natural 20. And I pointed my finger and like rolled the dice, and the DM was like, you point your finger into the air, a searing beam of energy releases from your finger, and its burning body collapses to the ground. And the rogue turns to the DM and you're like, do you just realize he just killed that himself?
That's
and
so
the fucking master
cool.
was so pissed. He's like, yeah, he killed it himself.
That is awesome.
So yeah, that was as a player. Oh, it was so good. It was such, I mean, I was on fire, and that was.
And then your dwarf went Super Saiyan after that moment.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I skin the dragon. I get all of the dragon skin. I'm making dragon armor. I was like, this is, you know, that actually was the last night that group played.
You ruined it for them. No one can live up to this again.
Yeah. Like, well, if it has to end. It ends that way.
I just see, like, it seems like if we could animate the story you were just telling, it's like you guys walked in and like the music started, like everybody froze.
Yeah.
And then like all of a sudden your dwarf cleric just went like Matrix style.
This dwarf pushes through everyone.
Yeah, like guys just see you like flipping off their shoulders and bouncing off walls and shit. Like everyone's just standing there in shock. Like, holy fuck, man.
Oh yeah. I mean that's what happened. Like literally we had people sitting there the rest of the evening going, You're out of the battle. And they're like, all right, I'm gonna go get a snack.
Well shit.
So that was me as a player. As a DM, there was an ongoing homebrew campaign that I created. It was a kind of like a slow burn of where information was starting to come out, and they would kill an underboss, and they would find letters and correspondence on them, and they would lead to the next character. So you'd kind of have this like slow burn of like characters interacting, like people you'd never heard of like, oh, like you're getting like a half of a phone call. There's internal struggle between the bad guys. Oh. One of the first culmination was all around these kobolds, and there are all these kobolds amassing in this cave, and they get to the end, and there is a kobold necromancer named Zathrol Darktouch. And
he's an uncle you don't bring over for holidays.
Yeah. And it was like, not only was it at the end of like this chapter of the story, it was at the end of the night. And they had slogged through this whole dungeon, and they had come out, and there were this ruin of a castle, and there's this kobold up in this pile of rubble, like, you know, very proud of himself, in this army of headless kobold zombies rise up and attack the players. And it was this huge battle, and they did kill Zathrol Darktouch, and they found more letters. But it was such a big moment that one of the players created a Facebook page for Zathrol Darktouch on the birthday, which is actually the death day. I always go over and you know, pay homage to the Cobalt that was as a dungeon master. That was kind of a fun moment. So now there's a ghost in the machine. In Facebook, there is a dead Cobalt necromancer that still has an account, that still is active and gets posts from time to time.
I was going to tell you a funny one. Some friends of mine and I went to a one-shot that was going on at a little comic shop in Mississippi when I was in college. And anyway, they originally had us signed up. They were supposed to have 6 people play, but then my friend from out of town came along. And we were like, can you squeeze another one in? And he was like, sure. So he just gave him a little gnome. The whole plan was that there was a king that had died, and there were like 6 different races that were living in harmony. They needed a member of each race to come together and go in this cave and go and then come back with however to pick the next king. And we all had like our own individual trials we had to go through. So every race had to do something to get us through it. And in the end, we came up on like some kind of a throne room and then like 6 tombs. The tombs opened, skeletons came out and started fighting us. Oh, and a door shut. To get the door open, we had to like get the bodies back in the tombs or somebody, but the bodies had to be of the race. So we had killed some of them and we were like, okay, let's go ahead and put some of us in there.
Oh.
And we did, and it turned out it killed us instantly once the thing closed. So
oops.
Somehow when it all ended, basically all 6 of us were dead except for the gnome was the only one still left to get out. But he just came out with him was the only one there, and he just told everybody, he said, I'm the new king. And that was it.
If it was only that easy.
He was like, they chose me in there, and it's set now. I'm the king.
That's a perfect way to end a one shot.
If I go visit you, Chris, and you take me into a game and you make me a gnome, fuck you.
Yeah. Not to be rude, but I literally have another interview in 3 minutes.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Cut it nice. To the wire. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. No worries. This is like totally super fun. And I would definitely like in a heartbeat do this again. But like, I'm like, oh crap, I got to pee. I got to let the cat out. And in 3 minutes, I got to be back on Skype doing a thing.
I hope the next interview is less fun.
Oh yeah, no, that's the thing. I'm like, I'm hoping literally the next one to be complete garbage. I'm like, yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
Just kidding. Wish you all the best.
All right, man. We'll let you go and get to it then. Been a pleasure, and we'll be in contact again.
Very good. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate this. It was really fun.
Absolutely.
Yep, thank you.
Take care.
Yep, have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Because Nerd. If you liked it, make sure to subscribe, share, rate, or comment. And check out becausenerd.com for even more cool shit. And if the spirit has truly moved you, you can pledge your support directly to us on Patreon. Because Nerd is a production of Scriptic Media.